And now, it's time for the Tri-State Sports Beat with your hosts, Nick Federico, Scott DeBell, and Joe Bruno.
Hello!
Hello! Let's rock and roll on another episode of the Tri-State Sports Beat here on your favorite podcast platform. You know where to listen to us. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever else you want to listen to. Radio.com, that's Spotify, not Spotify, Odyssey Now, or something like that. iHeartRadio, wherever you want to get us. You can get us. Everybody, how is everybody doing this week? How is all the New York fans doing this week? Some are probably doing well. Others, probably not so much. If you're a Yankee fan, you're doing fantastic. If you're a Jet fan, you're somewhere in the middle. And if you're a New York Mets fan, you are down in the dumps. And it's no bueno right now if you're the New York Mets. And that's where we'll start today with the New York Metropolitans. Welcome back, everybody, to a new episode of the Tri-State Sports Beat. Nick flying solo here today, and we will start with the bad, the horrible of the New York sports that are going on in the area right now. As baseball is into the last couple of months, heading to the postseason, the NFL is almost here, about 2-3 weeks away as we head into week 3 of the preseason. So let's get going. The New York Mets are an utter disaster. We haven't talked about it enough, but today that's what we will do. That's what we'll start on today. The New York Metropolitans are coming off this murderer's row of a schedule with 13 games with the first and second place team in the National League West, and that is the LA Dodgers and the surprise team of the year, the San Francisco Giants. They are 2-8 in these last 10. They got 3 more to go against the Giants. And then they can say goodbye to this murderer's row of a schedule that couldn't have come at a worse time if you're the New York Mets. But they're 2-8 since August 13th, since they kicked it off against the Dodgers. And they now have fallen to third place in the National League East after 3 months, April, May, and June, of being in first place. Not being a elite team, but being the best team in a bad division. And they currently find themselves, as we are sitting here, on August the 23rd, on Monday, the Mets have an off day before they get going against the Giants for the last time. 7 games back of the Atlanta Braves, who the Yankees take on for 2 games tonight. So if you're a Met fan, you're rooting for the Yankees tonight and tomorrow. 7 games back of the Braves in the division, and the same goes for that last wild card spot, which is currently held by the Cincinnati Reds. Now, most of all, what we're going to talk about today is most of the same if you're a Met fan. This year, last year, the narrative does not change here, ladies and gentlemen. It has not changed for quite some bit. The only thing I can think of at the moment that has changed is that the bullpen isn't blowing games left and right like they were last year and the year before. But the narrative, the story remains the same. The song remains the same. The offense is still horrendous. I didn't even want to look up what the Mets are with runners in scoring position. I know it's bad. We all know it's bad. But I might have thrown up at the number if I were to find it. This team can still, they still can't hit. They still can't score. Big freaking deal last night that the Mets won against the Dodgers. And they scored 7 runs last night. Big whoop-de-freaking-do if you're a Met fan last night. Big deal, okay? Now you're 2-8 through 10 games against the Dodgers and Giants rather than 1-9. Congratulations, it's looking up now. Congratulations. But this offense is abysmal. And if you're a Met fan, I'm sorry for you. Because this offense is just so, like, occasionally they'll put up 4-5 runs. They'll shock you a little bit, put up some runs. They'll give their pitching staff, who is down in the dumps right now, their rotation, they'll give them some help scoring runs. But oh my goodness. And I think Michael Conforto is where we're going to start, because he's kind of taking on the identity of the New York Mets as a whole. Sometimes you'll get good flashes of brilliance. Old Michael Conforto, last year's Conforto, the year before that, you'll get some flashes out of Michael Conforto, who's had a roller coaster of a season. And then all of a sudden, he'll go on a stretch where he is just absolutely awful. terrible. Now, I'll give it to him. August, this month of August has been very kind to Michael Conforto, hitting 288, 10 RBIs, all good and fun for Michael Conforto. But he hit this horrific July that he was on this past month, hitting like 150, 158. He's still feeling those effects from that month of July. 177, 171, I apologize. But he is still feeling the effects of that season, the roller coaster that he's had. It's obvious. You can tell if you're a Met fan today. You can tell that Michael Conforto is just not having it this year. He's just not. This horrific July month is still kind of looming over Michael Conforto's head. Now, I'm going to solely focus on him today, but let me be very clear. Michael Conforto is the one we're picking on today, but by no means is he the only one that should deserve some criticism. Dom Smith, not been great this year. Jeff McNeil, battled injuries this year, just like Conforto, but hasn't been the player that he should be. And of course, Francisco Lindor, the $300 million man, has been MIA. And he should be back soon. Maybe in this Giants series, we'll see. But 3.5 runs per game and abysmal with runners in scoring position is the same story with the New York Mets. It's obvious that Michael Conforto's confidence is just shot this year. Call it in. He is shot this year. The injuries really, really got to him. You can tell. That hamstring injury, who even knows if Michael Conforto is still 100% as we're turning the calendar to September toward the end of August here. But hopefully this month of August, he's hitting 288 with 10 RBIs, like I said. Hopefully you see Michael Conforto going on the up and up, because that's what the Mets need right now. Because Michael Conforto's success, along with others, like Alonso, McNeil, J.D. Davis actually hit the ball yesterday, contributed to the Mets' victory against the Dodgers yesterday. But Michael Conforto is crucial to the rest of this Mets season. Crucial. If the Mets want to start winning baseball games again and start getting within grasp of even the wild card spot, which they're 7 games out of, as well as the division, they need Michael Conforto to improve. Now, Michael Conforto's already put himself into a corner, not just on the field. Michael Conforto's going into a contract year. I mean, he's in a contract year right now. He wants to be paid. We were going into the season thinking Michael Conforto's a $200 million man, maybe. That price has significantly dropped. Now, if you're a Met fan, are you happy about that? That you might get Conforto on the cheap, on a cheaper long-term deal, and you hopefully he turns it around in next year? Maybe. That's an interesting thought. But you got to hope that this doesn't linger on into September, and if the Mets are just really out of it, I'm worried about Michael Conforto at this point. Since coming back from this hamstring injury, he has not been the same. And he might be playing hurt. Who knows? That could be the case because the Mets know, because he knows that the Mets need offensive help. He's one of their, on paper, going into his season, one of their better offensive players every year. But he has not contributed, just like a handful of other guys. But right now, Michael Conforto hitting 219 with 8 home runs and 30 RBIs for the year with an OPS of 700 is just not getting it done this year for the Mets. Same could be said for Jeff McNeil, Dom Smith. Same could be said for a lot of guys. But Michael Conforto offensively is the guy that everybody's picking at right now. And to be honest with you, it's well-deserved. It's well-deserved. Another thing that has just, to me, has killed the Mets since coming back after we haven't seen him for 3 quarters of the year, Carlos Carrasco is not helping the Mets whatsoever. And we came into Carlos Carrasco coming back as, especially Luis Rojas and Zach Scott, saying, you know what? We don't need to acquire a pitcher because we have a IL deadline acquisition in Carlos Carrasco. Now, could have anybody predicted that Carlos Carrasco was going to be this bad through a handful of starts for the Mets? No. But bottom line is, it's not just Carrasco. This is a team effort from the New York Mets this year and how sucky they've been. But Carlos Carrasco's a guy we haven't talked about all year because he's been hurt, but now it's time to pick on him. They're not getting any help from any of the members of the rotation. At best is Marcus Stroman. But when Marcus Stroman is on the mound, like Jacob deGrom, same story, the Mets cannot get him run support. But the deadline IL acquisition of Carlos Carrasco has just fallen on its face if you're Zach Scott and Luis Rojas, because he couldn't be worse. Last Sunday, the 15th, against the Dodgers, this man went 2 innings, 6 hits, 6 runs, that's all. That's the night the Mets gave up 14 runs against the Dodgers at Citi Field. We're thinking, holy crap. That's when you knew the Mets are in deep shit here. Deep. And then Friday at the Dodgers, he does better. You give up 3 runs, but the offense, of course, couldn't produce. Shocker. Carrasco was good enough in that game for the Mets to win, but naturally, they cannot get runners on base. When they do have runners on base, they can't produce the numbers. But the more importantly, the Mets needed Carlos Carrasco to be on top of his game because of all the pressure that's on the rotation now, because Jacob deGrom had a setback, and we're not going to see him, if at all, until mid-September. I'm going to give it that. Because of this setback, I'm going to say mid-September for Jacob deGrom. Now, my feeling is, don't even bother. Don't even bother. I know we'd like to see Jacob deGrom pitch. Maybe that gives the Mets some momentum as a team going forward. You see Jacob deGrom go out there and pitch like a gem. But do we have confidence that that's going to happen? No. So if I'm a Met fan, just, you know what? We're 7 games out. The schedule coming up is easy, so there should be some hope. But if you're a Met fan, you know you've been through it. Do you have any confidence that this team is going to get it done and do well enough to get within reaching distance of a playoff spot in no case a division? The answer would be no. And this rotation does not help you. Rich Hill. Taijuan Walker. Second half, Taijuan Walker has been one to forget. They stink. Marcus Stroman, like I said, has been the only competent one since DeGrom has gone down, but the Mets can't score runs for him. Which is nothing new here. Nothing new here. But newsflash, Mets fans. If you're expecting Jacob deGrom to come back and, you know, maybe we should expect him to pitch like he normally does. But him alone is not going to get you into the playoffs. I'm sorry, someone had to say it. Sorry. Jacob deGrom should not pitch again for the New York Mets this season because it's not worth it. Let's just say the Mets going forward, they have these series coming up against the dumpster fire of the NL, of the National League East, the Nationals and the Miami Marlins. If you don't take advantage of those series there, it's over. It's done. Get through these 3 games with the Giants. You maybe get one, if you're lucky. At best, they finish this 13-game murderer's row skid against the Giants and Dodgers 3-10. People were talking about 6-7. Ha! It's laughable to think about that now, because we were saying that last week when this brutal schedule began. Brutal. But the pitchers that the Mets have going into these 3 games against the Giants at home, McGill, Walker, and Carlos Carrasco. Are you confident? No. No. No two ways about it. Absolutely not. And then you got 4 straight series against the basement of the National League East, the Marlins and the Nationals. People are saying the Mets have to sweep these 4. That's not realistic. That's not realistic. This team is not going to suddenly go on a run and win 9 in a row like the Yankees, like the Braves. It's not going to happen. Sorry. Hate to break it to you. They don't have it. But win all those series. Take 3 out of 4. Take 2 out of 3. Win those series or it's over. I'm not burying the Mets yet. 7 games back. The division is still bad. But at this point in the year, if you don't win all of those series, Washington, Miami, Washington, Miami, goes exactly like that. If you don't win all of those series, it's over. Now, me saying that, do I think it's over already before it's even started? Absolutely. Because I have zero, absolute zero confidence that this team will get it together. Because why should I believe that by now? Okay, you had tough World Series contenders opponents against the Dodgers and the Giants. But at times, the Mets don't even compete. They don't even compare. So now you go into the easy part of the schedule. These easy next couple of weeks. If you're a playoff team, take care of business. If you're truly that team that we saw in the beginning of the year, April, May, and June, that first place Mets team that everyone was ranting and raving about, if you're that team, go take care of business against your dumpster back end of the division. If you're losing 2 of 3 to the Miami Marlins, if you're losing 3 out of 4 to the Washington Nationals, you don't deserve to be in the playoffs. You don't. You don't. Can't do that. If you're really a playoff team, take care of business. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Yankees on a freaking roll. And they're making me take back some things that I said about Aaron Boone, all that good stuff. Still don't want him to be the manager. But how could I possibly be negative when the Yankees have won 9 in a row? And we feel so, so, so good. And then later on, we'll talk Jets. Lot of mixed bag going on with the Jets. We'll talk about all that. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Do you have thoughts you want to share? Have questions, comments, or hot takes surrounding the world of New York sports? We want to hear from you, so give us a call on the new 24/7 Tri-State Sports Beat fan line. Call our new toll-free number at 862-260-4315 and leave us a voicemail with your questions and comments so you can be heard on that week's episode of the Tri-State Sports Beat. Again, that's 862-260-4315. We can't wait to hear from you, New York sports fans.
All right. We're back with the Tri-State Sports Beat. Hope everybody's doing well. Having a good week. School's starting soon. That's going to be tough. You college kids out there going back to campus, that'll be fun. You know, high school, middle school, that good stuff. Going back to school, going to start getting things rolling normal again. And you know what else is normal? The New York Yankees winning baseball games, baby! The Yankees, the hottest team maybe besides the Braves, who they're playing tonight in a 2-game series. If you're a Met fan, like I said, you better be having your Yankee jersey on and ready to go. But the Yankees have taken the baseball world by the balls and said, here we are, baby. We're back. The Empire's here. Watch out, Major League Baseball, because the Yankees are coming. We're here. We're back again. 9 in a row for the Yankees, the MLB's best, 26-9 post-All-Star game, 20 games above 500, and the most beautiful thing is just a mere 4.5 games back of Tampa for that division. Don't underestimate the Yankees right now. You can't. It's impossible. Don't do it. I'm not, you know, we said the division was out. We're looking for the wild card. But did we expect the Yankees to go on a 9-game run like they have against talent like the White Sox, like the Red Sox, who have collapsed and you love to see it? Did we expect that to happen? Absolutely not. But now all of a sudden, things are looking up. We're confident. And I have the confidence that the Yankees can maybe, just maybe, squeal out this division. Just maybe. I'm not going to guarantee anything. I'm not going to say this is exactly what's going to happen. But 4.5 games is not a lot. Now, Tampa's got to slow down, of course. But we're there. We're in arm's length. One slip up and the Yankees can take advantage right there. But a beautiful thing is, if the season ended today, the Yankees would be 2.5 games up on the A's for the first wild card spot. They would be playoff bound, ladies and gentlemen. And all is well again. For now. For now, in the evil empire. But this run that the Yankees have been on, since they've bounced back from that great yet gut-wrenching game in Iowa in the Field of Dreams game, has just been nothing like we've seen before. They take these last two games against the White Sox after coming back from Iowa. You feel good. You take 2 of 3 from them, from a first-place team who's a World Series contender, without a doubt. This year, they're 5-1 against the White Sox. Possible playoff opponent. We see them again. We're feeling confident going into the playoffs, if that's a scenario. They make up a game with the Angels. Joey Gallo, you know, gets the game-winning go-ahead home run. All good as well. Sets up a series with Boston that I said the week before could make or break the New York Yankees this year. They have the day-night doubleheader, and boy, they didn't disappoint. On Tuesday, they had that game, that day-night doubleheader. They get an okay start out of Jordan Montgomery. An okay start, but it ends up being, you know, he gave up 3 runs, gave up a home run here. But Loaisiga was the one that had to come in and close the game. We'll talk a little bit about it. Britton isn't comfortable now, who was on the IL as of a couple hours ago. Again, roller coaster season for Zach Britton. Hopefully he gets healthy, and we'll see what happens down the stretch. But Loaisiga works into trouble being in the closer role because of Chapman wasn't healthy at the moment. He's healthy now. Not necessarily playing all that well that we'd like to see. But Loaisiga comes in. He works in and out of trouble. Gives up a little bit of a heart palpitations if you're a Yankee fan watching this first game of the series and being like, oh, God, this is what it's going to be like now. This is what it's going to be like all series against our rivals, which we need to take. But he loads the bases with nobody out, and you're thinking, this is really going to happen. Another gut-wrenching loss. I can't take it anymore, because if I have to hear Aaron Boone say heart-wrenching loss one more time or anything like that, my head would explode. But Loaisiga gets out of trouble. He gets a crucial line out to Brett Gardner, close enough for the run not to score, and he strikes out the side for the rest of the 2 outs. Game over. Yankees take day game, of the doubleheader. They get to game 2. They get 4 2/3 shutout innings out of Luis Gil, who making his case to be on this roster going into next year, especially with so many questions about Severino, Domingo Herman, maybe Luis Gil having a whole season under, not a whole season, but going into next year having some major league experience would be very, very beneficial for the Yankees going forward as we head to next year. But they get 4 2/3 shutout innings out of Luis Gil, who's been impressive. He started 2 or 3 games, I believe. And then all the offense had to do was hit 2 solo home runs by Luke Voit, who has been the best player on the Yankees set for this stretch, without a doubt. And Giancarlo Stanton, who we have to give love to, because he's been as good as we've seen him in a Yankee uniform to this point. So the Yankees take the day-night doubleheader. You're feeling good. Game 3, let's go for the throat. Let's sweep them. Let's complete this collapse. You get a stellar bounce-back start from Andrew Heaney after coming off the Field of Dreams game where he gives up 7 runs, but instead he gives you 7 innings and 2 hits and 1 run pitching outing for him. Fantastic. When you get a back-end starting pitcher who you're not all that confident in, when you get a good start out of him, That's the recipe for success right there. If you're the Yankees, you had a 4-run second inning, which blew the game open, basically, versus the Boston Red Sox bullpen. I think it was against Garrett Richards and Nick Pivetta. But then Chapman comes in the ninth for the first time since he's been hurt. He allows the two base runners on. Boone actually pulls him. Now, I don't say all this all the time, but I love that Aaron Boone did that. He had the cojones to do it because Boone knows every game counts now. And this is crunch time. We are in mid to late August. It's time, no time for bullshit. No time for it. Chapman allows two base runners. Boone pulls him for Lucas Lecky, of all people, who's been pretty okay for what our expectations were. Lecky gets the final out. The Yankees sweep the Boston Red Sox, and oh, how sweet it is. Suck it, Boston. That's all I have to say about that. But then this series against the Twins, you're feeling good. You just took 2 out of 3 from the White Sox. You sweep the hated Boston Red Sox at the stadium. You come in against the Twins, and all I have to say is 24 runs in 3 games. That's all I have to say. That's all I have to say. Because the Yankees, historically, when you play the Minnesota Twins, it's a field day for you. A absolute field day. It's almost like playing the Orioles, if I do say so myself. But the Yankees scored 24 runs in 3 games. The fourth game obviously had to get postponed because of Hurricane Henri. Hopefully everybody's okay from that. And nobody was severely affected by that. But the main thing about this Yankees run is the energy and electricity that Luke Voit has brought to this lineup. And he is out for blood, ladies and gentlemen. Out for absolute blood. Because we knew going into last week, as Voit, I actually just got an update that he's the AL Player of the Week. So congratulations to Luke Voit. We love that. We love seeing a Yankee being represented in that way. But it was obvious in the beginning of last week, or the tail end of last week, that Voit was obviously discouraged for many reasons. Injury-plagued season, the acquisition of Anthony Rizzo probably rubbed him the wrong way. He is a human being. There's no way it wasn't going to affect him. But Luke Voit comes out and says, I deserve to play just as much as he does. Anthony Rizzo, that being. Said he was a, you know, he didn't lie. He's the home run king last year. He was a top 5 MVP voting. Voit has some ground to stand on here, based off of last year and what we've seen from him, basically, as a New York Yankee. He deserves to play as much as Anthony Rizzo. Whether you agree with him or not, it is what it is. But the bottom line is, with the way Luke Voit is playing right now, it's very, very hard to ignore him. Now, the Yankees, of course, going into Atlanta to take on the Braves, National League Park. So Boone's got a decision to make here. I haven't seen the lineup yet for tonight, but you got to make a decision here. There's no, if it's me, there's no way I'm putting Voit out there on defense. Anthony Rizzo is by far the superior defensive first baseman. Superior. Not even close, but it's hard to ignore Voit's bat right now. Going like 4 for 5 the night before, going 2 for 3 the other day. It's hard to ignore that. But if you're Aaron Boone, you got some flexibility here. When, you know, normally not playing in National League Park, you have some flexibility here. And with an idea that I didn't really understand at the time, because Yankee fans were all about it. Get Giancarlo Stanton in the outfield, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, he could do more harm than good there because of plays that he couldn't make in the outfield. He could get hurt playing out there. But Giancarlo Stanton hasn't done anything to me for me to say, yeah, he can't play in the outfield anymore. So that being said, with Stanton playing in the outfield, that makes the DH spot a little more flexible and more of a possibility for Luke Voit. So let's be honest here. We have Rizzo being the more defensive, the better defensive first baseman than Luke Voit. That's obvious. It is what it is. Voit can easily play. He is a DH. Let's just be real. Let's put it on the table. Luke Voit is a DH. He is not a first baseman. That's just what it is. But the bottom line is now the Yankees have some flexibility now when it comes to putting Stanton in the outfield. You can put Rizzo. If you want to play Voit in the field, you can. You could place Rizzo on the DH, which is a beautiful thing. But at the same time, too, you can have both Voit and Rizzo in the lineup as well. One of them DHing, one of them playing first base, Stanton in the outfield. Great. Settled. Everybody's happy. But what's going to happen when one of them cools down? That's going to be an interesting thing to happen. Hopefully it doesn't happen. If Luke Voit can continue to play like he is, great. If Rizzo can still contribute like he has been since he's gotten here, great. But let's be honest, it's not going to happen. There's going to be a drop-off somewhere. It's either going to be Rizzo, it's going to be Voit. Something's going to happen. But Boone, I got to give it to him. He's doing a great job handling this. He had Rizzo and Voit out there. Voit was leading off at one point. They gave DJ a day off. Great. The flexibility in this lineup is a good thing. This is what happens when you can put Stanton in the outfield and you got some lefty bats to work with here. But Luke Voit, bottom line, has been out for blood since then. He's been great. You know, July and August have been his months. July, he's hitting .385 and 26 at-bats. This month of August, he's hitting .320, 17 RBIs, 4 home runs, 16 hits, and 50 at-bats. It doesn't get better than that. If you're Luke Voit, and this past week alone, these past 7 days, .476, 10 hits, 11 RBIs, 2 home runs, and 21 at-bats. That's all-star caliber numbers there if you're Luke Voit. So without him, think about that without him. Without him, the Yankees don't technically sweep the Twins, and they don't sweep the Red Sox. Because Voit played a big part in that. Luke Voit is making a case for the Yankees to either pay him. He's got a couple years of arbitration left, but he's going to want to get paid. He's got some flexibility on that deal. The Yankees don't have to pay him right away. They got a couple more years of arbitration going, but he's putting the Yankees in a particular spot here because you could pay him, you could keep him, or you could trade him. Voit out and said it. I'm auditioning for 30 other clubs. He made the Yankees deal their hand with acquiring Rizzo. Now, the way it's trending is that after this season, the Yankees aren't going to re-sign Anthony Rizzo. I wouldn't close the book on that yet. You want to put it this way? I know Voit's playing very good right now, but long-term right now, Rizzo's an upgrade. You get a very above-average hitter, and you get a gold-glove defenseman at first base, which they haven't had since Mark Teixeira. Luke Voit doesn't supply that. He doesn't have that in his arsenal. He's a power bat, and that's really it. But when Luke Voit is on, he's on. I would love him to be a Yankee and stay here. I'd love to keep both of them if we could. But the Yankees are going to have a decision to make, that amongst others, of course, as well. You know, shortstop, what are they going to do in the outfield? You know, Clint Frazier's future's in doubt. Are they going to play Stanton full-time in the outfield? That's going to, you know, it's all going to play itself out when that time comes. But right now, the Yankees are just playing great baseball. They're playing outstanding, their best baseball of the year. And also a huge contributor to that is this great story of Andrew Velasquez. You couldn't write a better script in this situation. A kid from the Bronx who's staying with his parents while playing with the Yankees, he's playing for his favorite team he grew up watching, and he's actually contributing. Like, I didn't know Andrew Velasquez from the guy, from a stranger sitting next to me. But he did some career milestones while he's been up. He hit his first career home run against the Twins, you know, against a series in Boston. It was a couple games, but 429, 3 hits, 4 RBIs, and a stolen base. Let me tell you, I saw him hit that triple against the Twins the other night. That boy is fast. He hustles. Greg Allen, I thought, was fast. I think Andrew Velasquez might be better. Might be a little faster. You got to get them to run a 40-yard dash. Those guys, he is fast. And he contributes, and he's bringing that young swagger. You know, the Yankees have some swagger to them. It's been a little hidden this year at times, but he contributes, he's fast, he brings that young energy to the Yankees, and they're having fun again. That is the beauty. The Yankees are having fun again. But what's next? You know, they're still going to be tested. They are still going to be tested. They got two against Atlanta today and tomorrow. Go win one, go at best split one and two of them, at best. But then crucial, a crucial four games in Oakland against the A's, who they hold a 2.5 lead up against in the wild card standings. Crucial four-game series in Oakland. The pitchers they got going, Tyone, Cortez, who's been great too, has been a great story for Nestor. Not going to forget about him. Gerrit Cole in Game 3, Monty in Game 4. Arguably, as they stand right now, as the pitching staff stands right now, that is your best four you want out there. That is your best four currently presented within the past couple weeks. Ideally, you'd want Herman back. Ideally, you would want Kluber back. Ideally, you'd want Severino to start getting healthy. Don't count on seeing him this year. But right now, those four guys are who you want out there. Tyone has had a great second half. We killed him in the beginning of the year. He's starting to actually find it. Cole is Cole. You know, he considers a bad start. He gives up two runs. I mean, he was not always going to be that sub-1 ERA type of guy, that one ERA type of guy. But Gerrit Cole is the ace of the staff. That's no question about it. When he's on the mound, you expect the Yankees to win. And you're getting contributions from Nestor Cortez. You're getting contributions from Jordan Montgomery, who I think still has a very bright future with the Yankees. But those are the four guys you want starting the game. And if you get four quality starts out of them against the Oakland A's, you have a real, real chance here. As the Yankees just started in Atlanta. Montgomery's on the hill for them in Game 1 against the Braves. Tyone, Cortez, Cole, and Monty, that's who you want right now in this situation as the Yankees are playing great baseball. The Yankees need to keep having fun. That's what they're doing. You can tell that these men are having fun. That's what it's all about. Cliche, but it's true. When the Yankees are having fun, they're winning. Now go win two against Atlanta. Go give the A's everything you got. And let's do this thing. Now, does it hurt that Britton's back on the IL again? Yeah, it does. A strained left elbow. Not great if you're Zach Britton. Another trip to the IL in a roller coaster season that has been Zach Britton's season. But the Yankees are holding up. They have Chapman back. Loaisaka's stepping up as a closer at times. Right now, honestly, I feel more comfortable with Loaisaka closing full-time than I am Chapman right now. Chapman, through the second half of the year, has put since the spider attack, since the sticky stuff, you know, situation, Chapman hasn't been the same pitcher. We say the same thing about Gerrit Cole, but I think it has affected Chapman a little more. If you really think about it, Chapman hasn't been the same guy. Since that sticky stuff situation, Chapman went from a 0 ERA guy to about a 3.79 ERA if you're Chapman. I'm not comfortable with him closing right now. The Yankees are on a one-run game. He puts two guys on base. I'm not comfortable with that. I'm just not. I have more confidence in Jonathan Loaisaka, who's been their best bullpen arm all year. Peralta hasn't been bad. Lucas Lecky's actually been a surprise. Beginning of the year, we were like, who the heck is this guy, and why the heck is he out there? But Lucas Lecky's been fine. Clay Holmes has come back. We haven't seen enough out of him. Chad Green is still very good. But the Yankees have it together right now. They really do. And imagine if they weren't doing all this winning, the things we pick apart. Gary Sanchez ain't hitting, but it doesn't matter because Aaron Judge is offensively, besides Luke Voit, Aaron Judge is having a very quiet, like, really good season. He's consistently been hitting in the 280s. It's been very good for Judge. Stan, you got to give him love. You got to give Stan. The Stan haters like myself, we're quiet right now. Stan's been hitting the cover off the ball. Ever since he came back from Iowa, he's been hitting the cover off the ball. He's been doing great. The Yankees, bottom line, the Yankees are having fun, and they're a fun baseball team to watch. I'm excited to watch. Let's go, Yankees. All right, I'll take another break. We'll finish out with the Jets. Two preseason games in the books. We'll talk about the game in Green Bay. We'll talk about some unfortunate stuff that's gone on around the Jets, because if you're a Jets fan like myself and Scott and Joe, it's never, ever easy. For some reason, things happen. The football gods say, hey, it's that time of year again where we strike thunder upon the New York Jets in Florham Park. But we'll talk all about it, the good, the bad, the in the middle, whatever. We'll talk about that next here on the Tri-State Sports Beat. Do not go anywhere. I will be right back. The Tri-State Sports Beat has partnered up with Southside Productions to bring the podcast to the next level. Southside Productions features an already impressive yet small roster of podcasts, including everyone's third favorite baseball podcast, Take a Pitch. Us, along with everyone else at Southside Productions, are working hard to bring the best sports media content to you, the listener. So do us a favor and check us out at www.southsideprod.com. That's southsideprod.com. And follow us on all major social media platforms. And now, back to the show. Little Mac Miller beat for everybody here. I like doing music in between the commercials and when I come back to talk to you guys. I hope like a little bit of that, like a little bit of music, a little bit of funk up in there as we wrap up another week of the Tri-State Sports Beat. I did say last week that we're going to be up more. I think we're going to start that this week. We're going to get multiple podcasts a week, maybe a little shorter ones. This one might be going over an hour because I'm just about to talk Jets, and everyone knows I love to ramble and rant and love on my New York Jets, of course, as we're heading into the season. But yeah, more content may be coming your guys' way, so thank you. I just want to take some time real quick. Thank you all the loyal listeners. You know, we've been a little up and down lately these past 2 months. Vacation, people have been on vacation. School is taking a lot of time and stress on everybody here, finding job. We're becoming adults now, ladies and gentlemen. We're not those kids anymore that can just say, hey, let's record a podcast and let's all do it right now. Life gets in the way, unfortunately. We hate it. It is what it is. But we're still here to provide sports, New York sports content for you guys out there that love it. And I do appreciate people that still listen to this. We've been doing it a long time. And we've had consistent listeners. We've been able to partner with great guys like Max and Billy and Mike and everybody else at Southside Productions, like you just heard in the read before. I'm thankful for them. They totally understand that life happens. It's great that you can work with people that understand life happens. When you get to it, you get to it. But I can almost guarantee you will be getting multiple podcasts a week. If not two, three. If not two podcasts a week, maybe three. Maybe some shorter ones. Maybe could be 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes to 30 minutes. And I feel like talking like I do right now could be up to an hour. Who knows? We'll see what happens. But we're trying to keep up more with what's going on as football is coming around. The Jets and the Giants are starting to get things going. The playoffs are in the reach for the Yankees. The Mets have their stuff going on. There's other things going around that we could do. But please, 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 you guys know where to find us, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. The phone number is there for y'all. If you want us to talk about something, or you want to talk to us, or we want to talk to you, obviously, don't be afraid to reach out. If you're listening to this, today's Monday, the 23rd. If you're at Jets camp Tuesday and Wednesday, as they have joint practices with the Eagles, all three of us will be there. Me, Scott, Joe, will be there. If you listen to the show and you want to come say, and if you just happen to be there as well, come say hi. Please. Please do. Come say hi. Come hang out. We're friendly guys. But we love, you know, we've We've had, you know, some feedback from fans. We love hearing back from fans. We love it. We love it. We love it. Love interacting with you guys. And we appreciate so much that you've stuck with us through these times of up and down. We haven't uploaded in a couple weeks and whatever, the wacky schedule and all that. But enough of that. I'm always thankful for y'all. But now it's time to get into the meat and the bones of the New York Jets as stuff has happened. Stuff has happened, and it's not great.
The goddamn Jets.
The goddamn Jets is right. Oh. You know, things were going so well. We were so hyped about the season. We've been to training camp a couple days. Love what we see out of the rookie quarterback, the coach. The atmosphere around One Jets Drive now is something like we haven't really seen, felt before as Jet fans, long-time Jet fans. But, of course, something had to happen. Like I said before, the football gods have come down and strike it upon us as Carl Lawson, the pride of the defense, the anchor of the defensive line coming off the edge, tears his Achilles, of course, in Green Bay with the joint practice in Green Bay, and we have lost Carl Lawson for the entire season. Now, obviously, as a human, you hope Carl Lawson gets well. He's already had surgery. Recovery is on its way. We hope the best for Carl. We had big expectations for Carl. He had big expectations of himself. Let's be real. He was primed for a big, big season for himself. And he wanted to prove it. If you're a diehard Jets fan like us, you've watched all the stuff. You've watched everything. The One Jets Drive stuff, all the stuff that the Jets put out. If you're a Jet fan, you know that Carl Lawson was primed and ready to prove the doubters wrong, that he could get to the quarterback. But now the Jets lose their best player in camp before he even really debuts for the green and white. But this has effects on the team altogether. It really does, you know. Obviously, Robert Saleh, having the defensive background, was, you know, installing his philosophy, and not just the defense, the whole team, you know, putting his footprint on this, which, you know, is a great thing right now. But no Carl Lawson, the worst thing that probably could have happened to the Jets as a team outside of anything that happens to Zach Wilson, obviously. But now he's gone. So now the Jets have to rely on guys like Sheldon Rankins, Quinnen when he comes back, when Vinny Curry's available, Bryce Huff, of course, Foley Fatukasi, maybe some young guys like Hamza Nasruldeen, Jamie and Sherwood. Got to rely on young guys here. But this puts a lot of pressure on some of those guys in particular, like Bryce Huff, like John Franklin Myers, like Quinnen, to step up. We know Quinnen's going to be good. We know he's going to get to the quarterback. He's going to get in the backfield. But Quinnen was not going to see as many double teams because the opposing team would have to, you know, would have to step up for Carl Lawson. They'd have to account for Carl Lawson being there. Now that's gone. So the Jet, you know, Quinnen's going to see a lot more double teams this year. So now guys like Huff and John Franklin Myers, who we expect to have a little bit of a, you know, a breakout season this year for your expectations of him, and of course veteran guys like Vinny Curry, Ronald Blair, who's not a guy that everybody knows about, Sheldon Rankins they brought in free agency. I'm not saying that it isn't the end-all be-all that Carl Lawson is not going to play the whole season. It's the biggest hit the Jets probably could have taken, though. It really is. The D-line is still a strength of this team. We look at this D-line, Sheldon Rankins, Quinnen, Vinny Curry when he comes back, Bryce Huff, and John Franklin Myers. There's potential there. There's potential, there's veterans, there's guys we know what they are, and then there's the mystery guys. Like I said before, we know what John Franklin Myers could have a breakout season. Bryce Huff, undrafted guy, has, you know, is beloved by Jeff Ulbrich and the Jets defense and defensive room. We know what Vinny Curry is. We know what Sheldon Rankins is, maybe. And Quinnen is just going to grow and get better. But now, any inability a big factor here. Any inability for the Jets not getting to the quarterback or rushing the passer or having an effective pass rush or rush defense will really, really affect this secondary immensely. Now, of course, you got C.J. Mosley, and Jared Davis now is hurt. We're not going to see him. An ankle injury, not going to see sustained in the game against the Packers. Not going to see him until around the bye week. That hurts. So now they have to have Jamien Sherwood or Hamza step in that spot. Or Noah Dawkins, a guy that's impressed in camp. But going back to my original point, if the Jets cannot rush the passer or rush the line, or if they can't do that, this secondary is going to be exposed for what they are. Young, inexperienced, and unknown. The only thing we really know is Marcus May is going to make plays. LaMarcus Joyner's a veteran. He's going to make plays. But other than that, we don't know. They're inexperienced. I'm not saying that they're bad. The thing is, we don't know what the Jets secondary is. I can tell you from what I've seen in camp, they're big. They're, you know, physical. But they haven't gone up against top-tier talent. And they've gone up against each other in the preseason, in training camp. That gets old after a couple of weeks. They're not going up against the top-tier opponent in preseason. They're not going up against, you know, Kenny Golladay. They didn't go up against Sterling Shepard. They didn't go up against Darius Slayton, Saquon. And in Green Bay, they didn't go up against Aaron Rodgers. They didn't go up against Devontae Adams. We got to see about this secondary. They're young, inexperienced, and unknown, like I said. But they're going to be exposed if the defensive line can't do what we originally thought. Without Carl Lawson, that's going to be an issue. That's going to be something to watch out for, especially now because the Jets are going to have joint practices with the Eagles before their preseason game. We're going to take a close look at what the pass rush is going to be like, especially against a mobile quarterback like Jalen Hurts. We're going to see what happens. But now the Jets going into week one without their stud pass rusher, their beloved free agent that they had, two of them actually now, Jared Davis, there's now suddenly questions about this defense. When in the beginning of the year, on paper, before camp even started, and during camp these past couple weeks, this is the strength of this team, their studs, top 10, top 15 defense, even with this unknown secondary. Now it's, can this line get to the quarterback without Carl Lawson? Who's going to step up at linebacker with Jared Davis missing out? What's Jamien Sherwood? I'll tell you, he looks good in camp to me. Hamza Nasruldeen, he's supposed to start. Yeah, he's penciled in to start. And the weak side linebacker spot next to C.J. Mosley. We'll see. It's going to be interesting to see what happens and how these corners battle. Because let's go over it. Week one, Robbie Anderson, D.J. Moore, it's not easy guys. Those guys could blow right past you. We know that. Robbie's been here. The Patriots, the tight ends may be a problem. And then you look further, Tennessee, A.J. Brown, Julio Jones. That's going to be a problem. That I'm not looking forward to. The secondary was going to take a hit before then. Now, wow. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. But now recently that the news has came out, Schefter tweeted yesterday that the Jets are now looking or seeking a trade for a possible pass rusher. Names have been thrown out there. Chandler Jones, for example. Derek Barnett has the connection to Philadelphia and Joe Douglas. Brandon Graham, for some reason. Everson Griffin was an option, but he just signed back in Minnesota. Olivier Vernon's been a name. None of those really stick out to you besides Chandler Jones. And we'll dive into Chandler Jones for a second as a hypothetical. We look at Chandler Jones, 19 sacks in 2019, Pro Bowl caliber numbers, and then he has this bicep injury last year, and he's got one sack in five games and gets hurt and now had surgery, and he's 31 years old, and we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what kind of player he's going to be. He's unhappy in Arizona because he's unhappy with his contract. He wants to be traded. Arizona doesn't want to trade him. This is the problems, though, that the Jets would inherit if they were to trade for a guy like Chandler Jones. 31 years old, he wants to be paid. Not to mention, Joe Douglas isn't a guy that gives up draft picks for players. He's not. He hasn't been. He never has been. So why now would be the opportunity? And it doesn't even make more sense. It makes less sense to me as well, because if we really think about it here, if the Jets trade for Chandler Jones, whatever it may be, is he a one-year stopgap kind of guy? Maybe. But let's say Chandler Jones has a big year for the Jets. Let's say he's the 2019 version of himself. It's 19 sacks. Let's just say, hypothetically, he's a contract year. Then you're more inclined to sign him and keep him. So if I'm Joe Douglas, I'm looking at this, I'm like, wow, this is a lot of money to be spending on the defense a little bit. You already got Lawson making 15 a year. He's on the shelf. You got CJ Mosley making $17 million a year. His contract is pushed over because he sat out because of COVID. So, I mean, that benefits them a little bit. And Chandler Jones, you know, would be market value maybe somewhere in the middle, $16 million a year. That's the market value I got from SpotTrack. Lawson making 15 per, CJ making 17 per. You sign Chandler Jones to a long-term contract that's $16 million per. And on top of that, they still have to decide on Marcus May. A franchise tag will be more expensive probably than they want to pay him. And, you know, he's estimated $12 to $13 million a year if he gets a long-term deal from the Jets. Again, according to SpotTrack. That's a lot of money to be spending on the defense. It would be scary, a healthy Carl Lawson and Chandler Jones. I'll take that all day. But now we have to think about, okay, year one, Zach's, you know, rookie year in the books. That's just another year you got to think about having to pay the quarterback, having to get off more offensive weapons for the quarterback. This is stuff to think about. We don't want to think about it yet because the season hasn't started yet, one. But these are things we have to think about. And the main point is, I don't know if Joe Douglas is willing to give up draft picks and players for a one-year stop, a possible one-year stopgap kind of guy. Now, Chandler Jones, you know, I was looking at it today. He's a 3-4 system guy there in Arizona. Does he fit a 4-3? I don't know. Derek Barnett from Philadelphia, they run a 4-3 over there. He would fit perfect. He'd fit great here. But again, that's a trade thing. You have to trade for a guy. You have to give up some assets there. Philadelphia's not going to let him go for nothing. Arizona's going to want some kind of compensation for a Pro Bowl caliber pass rusher. So that's stuff to think about. Do the Jets make a move? Or, like Saleh has said, do they believe in the guys that they have? Do they believe in Bryce Huff, John Franklin Myers? Do they believe in these guys that they have to get the job done? It's going to be an ongoing, you know, thing to watch. As far as the Packers game goes, again, disclaimer, preseason, it is what it is. We're not going to overreact, but I'm so glad that Jets fans have the A-OK from the media to say, Jets fans, it's okay to be happy about Zach Wilson. Gee, thanks. Thanks. Thanks a lot. Thanks for giving me the A-OK to be giddy and excited about my potential future franchise quarterback. Thank you. Thank you. I got the approval from the New York Post. Thank you. I can be excited about it. Thank you. It's okay. Jets fans, I'll tell you the same thing too. I'm not telling you should, whatever. However you feel about Zach Wilson. Me personally, giddy as could be. Scott, I'll speak for him. Giddy as could be. Joe, giddy as could be. Sam Darnold guy, by the way. Joe Bruno. Listen, Zach was good. I mean, you take away more, takeaways from this game. 9 for 11, 128, 2 touchdowns to Tyler Croft. You know, 11.6 yards per attempt. And people are complaining, oh, let him throw the ball down the field. He was. I saw plenty. I saw plenty that I wanted to out of Zach Wilson up in Green Bay. He was accurate, and he's just getting more comfortable in this Mike LaFleur offense, which is just great. It's what you love to see. People are drooling all over him. Even Colin Cowherd, that fraud, he's too short for me, even though Aaron Rodgers is an inch shorter than him, blah, blah, blah. You know, he looks like Johnny Manziel. Really? I won't get into it, but does that look like Johnny Manziel to you? Even the style of play. Does that look like Johnny Manziel to you? That looks like a kid that puts in hours and hours of work into his craft. That is what it is, man. The tape speaks for itself. Zach Wilson looks great. I'm not ready to tell you he's the best quarterback in this draft class, but through 2 weeks of the preseason, he looks good. Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. He looks good. Okay, he's going up against second and third teamers, blah, blah, blah. Isn't every other rookie quarterback, basically, for the most part? Answer me that. Riddle me that, Batman. Isn't most rookie quarterbacks, Mac Jones, Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, who suddenly is radio silent. Nobody wants to talk about Trevor Lawrence, even though he's probably doing, I couldn't tell you, I don't pay attention to the Jaguars. Could be doing good things up there in Jacksonville. Who knows? People wouldn't know it because everyone's obsessed with Justin Field and Zach Wilson. Whatever. But the being giddy about Zach Wilson justified? I don't know. I think for Jet fans it is. For people who aren't, I don't know. For people who aren't Jet fans, you know, you like what you see on tape, but there's always a but. But he's not playing against second. He's not playing against the starters. But enough. Zach Wilson can't control, Robert Saleh can't control who he goes up against in a preseason game. Sorry. I've seen Zach make good throws against Green Bay's number one defense in practice, in the joint practice. I've seen him do it against their own defense in camp. Zach can make throws. Like, I've seen it firsthand. The ball comes out fast. He's got all the intangibles to be a good quarterback in this league. Will he? That remains to be seen. Ask me that after this year, going into year two. That's all. But Zach is doing a lot of right things. Going through progressions like a professional. So many, countless times in the Green Bay game. Looking off his first read, going right to his second. Ball comes out so fast. That's the one thing about his game that's just, you can't teach. Making necessary adjustments at the line. What a concept. We see this in practice. If you're a Jet fan, you've been at camp. We've seen Zach Wilson make adjustments at the line. Sam Darnold didn't have any chance to do that under Adam Gase. Zero. Put it out there. Zero. Zach Wilson now has the freedom as the quarterback of this team to, if he sees something wrong, he can change it. Mike LaFleur doesn't handcuff the poor kid. The Jets are putting a lot on his plate, and he's saying, feed me more. And the chemistry with Corey Davis is just on the money right now. Again, if you're a Jet fan, if you've watched, if you've seen it in camp, this isn't a surprise to most people, but Zach Wilson and Corey Davis have a great relationship as far as what we've seen in camp. This isn't new to me. It wasn't new to me. It wasn't shocking to me to see him and Corey Davis hook up a couple of times in the game against Green Bay. That's what they need. What would be nice is that Elijah Moore gets on the field. Hopefully he plays this week. You know, hopefully he participates in practice this week against the Eagles, plays in the game. We'll see what happens. The defense, on the other hand, in the game, if you're a Jet fan, you're like, little concerning. A little. But, you know, because they're going up against the Packers second and third team, the lack of pass rush was obviously the storyline there with no Carl Lawson, obviously. The Jets are going to need to adjust to that. But the secondary took their medicine at times, and, you know, they had some good plays. Echols had a pick, who's my camp favorite. If he doesn't make this team, he's going to make an NFL roster, I'll tell you right now. Brandon Echols, number 25 on the Jets. If he doesn't make the Jets, he's going to make an NFL roster, I guarantee you. And then Lamar Jackson had a pick, too, the cornerback. Had an interception. So that's good news. Now we get the Jared Davis injury. Came out today. Saleh said, probably not till the bye week. That's another big hit. That is another huge hit to this team. Got to rely on guys like Sherwood, Blake Cashman, Hamza, Noah Dawkins. Some, unknown guys on this Jets team. Gonna need to step up. Gonna need to do it. So what's up next for the Jets? What's up next for them? They got these joint practices with the Eagles. They got the game on Friday at MetLife. I may or may not be there. Was that the game against the Giants? It is what it was. Zach looked good in his first drive. We talked about it last week. But more roster cuts are to come. You know, this is the last week of the preseason before we get that two-week break before week one. Amped up, excited for that. But more roster cuts are to come. Hey, don't just look at the Jets. Look at other things, too. There could be that one surprise cut there on a team where the Jets just fully take advantage of that. Maybe it's a pass rusher. I think that'd be ideal. But what to look for if you're a Jet fan going into week three of the preseason, the final week, is look for more progression from Zach. And additionally, that D-line without Carl Lawson. That's the big thing to take away. And this week, if you're a Jet fan, you're watching every move that Zach Wilson makes. You're watching how he progresses as an NFL quarterback, how he's, you know, how he's taking command of this huddle, taking command of this Mike LaFleur offense. And then you're watching the defense without Carl Lawson. Are they getting to the quarterback? Are they still able to, you know, get that consistent pressure in practice in a game? We'll see. And, of course, we're 3 weeks away from week one, ladies and gentlemen. And I couldn't be more excited because this time of year we love covering the NFL. We love covering football. Love the Jets, love the Giants. We're going to have some serious fun this year. Zach Wilson with the Jets. We plan on being there in week two for our first official game back since COVID. It'll be fantastic. Can't wait for the Jets to take on the Patriots week two, but cannot wait for football to be back in general. We're excited. We can't freaking wait. We can't freaking wait.
Get used to the mantra, all gas, no break.
I'm going fast again!
We're all in this year. The Jets may not be the team that we think that they're going to be, what we want them to be, but things are looking up there in Florham Park. They are. From what we've seen, we're happy. The Jets are going to have to roll with the punches here. They're really just going to have to roll with it. I think that's it. I think that's it for me for another episode of the Tri-State Sports. We hope everybody enjoyed it. Of course, you know where to follow us. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all that good stuff. The phone number, 862-260-4315. You all know it. I'm out. Enjoy the baseball. Let's go Yankees. Mets, pick it up. And football, almost back. We'll see you next week, ladies and gentlemen.
Namaste, and keep listening to the Tri-State Sports Beat.
Goodbye!
It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and Heavy D up in the limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, rap attack, Mr. Magic, Molly Mall.
Hello, Brooklyn. I love your corners. I pack your soul. I love your corners. I pack your soul. I love your corners. I pack your soul.